pages, 254 through 271. That's a bunch. Chapter 21 of the book of Revelation. Does anyone know what chapter 21 is about? Have any idea? All right. New Jerusalem. That's the main thing I want to talk about. There's a few things I'll discuss prior to getting into that, but not much. That's really where I want to focus and get us hooked up in that. So let's read verse 1 on page 254. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. Notice there, and I saw. That's used 24 times in the book of Revelation, that phrase. And what it does is it shows the many visions that John is seeing while he's in the big vision. So this is what this particular part would be. This isn't the major vision. The major vision always begins with, I was in the Spirit. But the many visions, the things that he sees while he's in the major vision, all begin with, and I saw. And there's a bunch of those things. And he says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away. Now, what is that word earth there? But what have we constantly talked about? Yeah, there you are. So there's a new gi, all right? So we're not really talking about a new planet, but I'll try to make this clearer even as we progress through here. So a new region, you know, a new area, something new is happening here. And there was no more sea. So we have that. We have the thought there that after I saw, and I saw. Now, this was after death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. Remember that last week, last time? When John saw heaven and hell, earth and the serpent cast into the lake of fire and all that was cast in the lake of fire, and death and hell were cast in the lake of fire. So this is after that. This is what John is seeing. But he's also in the chapter verse here. We've changed chapters. We've changed from chapter 20 to 21. But you know, but John didn't stop the book of Revelation and say, okay, chapter 21. You know, those are things that we've inserted there. And actually, this first part of chapter 21 is the same part of the vision, or in the same vision that we were actually talking about last time. Now, it's necessary to note that this wasn't a cosmic explosion by nuclear war that brought the new heaven and the new earth. That's why I mentioned it was after death and hell were thrown into the lake of fire that John sees the new heaven and the new earth, right? Do you read it in there anywhere where there was a nuclear blast or the earth exploded or anything? No, because that's not what brings it. What brings the new heaven and the new earth is the doing away with death and hell. That's what I want us to make sure that we see. The removal of death and hell is what brought the new heaven and the new earth. The word translated new, now I'm on about the second, third paragraph down on that page. The word translated new is K-A-I-N-O-S. And what that word means is actually not as new like we think as new. It really means never experienced. The word new is found 61 times in the King James Version. The word new. But this thought isn't found that much. What this word means, and there's a bunch of listings there, and that. But come down to where the paragraph begins with the word used here for new heaven. The word used here for new heaven doesn't mean newly created as we would think. It does mean new, as in never experienced or never used. This would be the context. We allow the chapter breaks to break our contextual attachment. This verse, 21:1, follows its previous verse, 20:15, and is in the context with, and that should be 20, not 21, context with 20:11 through 15. That context is the removal of the devil and the removal of the death and removal of hell and the removal of those not in the books. All of that is removed from the earth and cast into the lake of fire and leaves the earth in a new state never experienced before. Now, wouldn't you think that would be kind of new? That makes sense to you? Because all that's what brought the new heaven and the new earth, not a nuclear blast or explosion or God burning it up, you know, with fervent heat and all that stuff. That's not what it means. So what John saw was not a nuclear explosion, but the end of death and hell. So flip over to page 255. Right column. I want to read again. Come down under Isaiah. Skip that next paragraph and come down to where it begins with what John is showing us. Is a time will come when evil will no longer exist. It is a new heaven and earth. There is no turmoil. See. He said, there's no more see. No death and no hell. All evil and wickedness has been thrown into the lake of fire forever. Today's popular teaching is that this world will be destroyed. A newly created world, manufactured by God, will be inhabited by His people. What, now, get this point. Why would He go to all the trouble of cleansing this earth from all evil, death, the dragon, and those not in the book, and then destroy it? Did you get my point there? Why would God go to all the trouble of cleansing the earth from evil and death and hell and evil people, and then turn around and destroy the earth? Well, he doesn't mean it will be a waterless planet. That's not what he means either, you know. So why not just destroy it and not worry about cleaning it up, you know? So that's right. I mean, that's if that's what's going to happen, why go to all the trouble of cleaning it up? Let's read verse 2. Now John saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Now it's important to get here what exactly he saw. He saw the holy city, the New Jerusalem, prepared as a bride. This is what he saw coming down. Now did he see a newly constructed Jerusalem? What exactly does that verse say that John saw? A new Jerusalem. Was it a newly constructed Jerusalem or okay? To what was it John is referring here? So let's try to figure this out. He tells us in a little further down in the same chapter, a few verses down, actually in verse 9, let's read here about that new Jerusalem. And there came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, and I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. Now, put those two verses together. What was it that John was really seeing? Was he really seeing the city floating down? The bride. The angel says, Come, I want to show you the new Jerusalem. He takes it to a mountain and he shows him what? The Lamb's wife. Right? And the Lamb's wife is the new Jerusalem. Now we're going to work here just a second, and this will be real clear for you in just a minute. But I want to make sure that you get that, because this is the context for which John speaks here. Now what does the Bible teach about the heavenly Jerusalem? Turn pages for me. 256. Now what I have for you here is a whole thing of Galatians chapter 4 verse 22. You guys want to pull that door too now? I think it's cooled down a little bit. Galatians 4:22 here. I've got you verses 22 through 31. This is the King James Version. Now what I want to do though is, and you can read that there, but what I want to do though is go to the NIV and just read it from the NIV. A little more modern, very trusted version as well. So let's read it out of 4:22. Now this is what we're studying. Now we're trying to get a handle on the New Jerusalem. Paul writes here, For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by the slave woman and the other by the free woman. His son by the slave woman was born in the ordinary way, but his son by the free woman was born as the result of a promise. Now do you see what he's doing here? The free woman, Sarah, had a son as a result of the promise, verse 23. But he had another son that wasn't of the promise, and it was born through a servant girl,
Hagar. Okay. Verse 24 says, these things may be taken figuratively. For the woman, now, note women, notice this plural, that's one point, represents two covenants. One covenant is from Mount Sinai, Old Covenant, and bears the children who are to be slaves. This is Hagar. Let me read that without my interjections there. These things may be taken figuratively, for the women represent two covenants. One covenant is from Mount Sinai and bears children who are to be slaves. This is Hagar. Now Hagar stands for Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present city of Jerusalem. Now when did Paul write this? About a year, would you guess? AD 50, 60, somewhere in there? Sure. It corresponds to the present city of Jerusalem because she is in slavery with her children. In slavery to what? What was... Yeah? Is that really what... Mount Sinai. Hook it up with Mount Sinai. Hook it up. Old Covenant. There you go. She's in slavery. Galatians 4:26. But the Jerusalem that is above, this is the one we're trying to figure out, is free. And she is our mother. Oh, now what does that mean? She's our mother. For it is written, be glad, O barren woman who bears no children. Break forth and cry aloud, for you who have no labor pains, because more are the children of the desolate woman than of her who has a husband. Covenants, the Old Covenant, New Covenant, are the Judaism versus Christianity, which has produced the more children? Sure. Oh, yeah. Way, way more. Yeah. And this is what that verse is. And then Galatians 4:28. Now you, brothers, like Isaac, are children of the promise. At that time, the son born in the ordinary way persecuted the son born by the power of the Spirit. It is the same now. What he's saying is that this time there's a tremendous persecution, right? Judaism persecuting the church. Then Isaac was persecuted by Ishmael. So this is what he's saying. Now, this is what I don't want you to miss. Make sure we get this. Okay? But what does the Scripture say? I like Paul saying. But what does the Scripture say? Get rid of the slave woman and her son. For the slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with the free woman's son. Get rid of what? Slave woman and her son. All right, now, who is the slave woman in this allegory? Hagar. Hagar was really not the allegory. Hagar is the real thing. I mean, she was what? Old Covenant, Judaism. Right. Get rid of it. That's what the Scripture said. So Paul, they taught, get out of Judaism, you know, throw it away, get rid of it. Verse 31, therefore, brothers, we are not children of the slave woman, but of the free woman. But you have, this is another thing. Now, what I'm trying to show you here, is Paul gives us this allegory, and what he's likening to is Hagar with Mount Sinai and Judaism and the law, and Sarah with Christianity and the New Covenant. And he says that the Jerusalem, that the natural Jerusalem, the Jerusalem that is in bondage and is Hagar. But the Jerusalem that is above, the heavenly Jerusalem, the new Jerusalem that we're talking about here, is our mother. Is that what he said? Is that pretty much what he said? So what I'm wanting you to see here is that the church is the Lamb's wife and is the mother of us. We've been birthed, born again, through the church. That's what the church is here to do. It's the Lamb's wife. Now, this also, what I want us to see is something that I want to make sure we get is that we're not going to the New Jerusalem one day. Goodness, I wish that Pam and Carl were here. Because we're so taught that what we're about to study is heaven, walls of gold,
streets of gold, the walls of gold. Well, walls of gold too, turns to gold. But walls of jasper, streets of gold, gates of pearls, you know, and all these things. And we're taught this is heaven and where we go once we die. No, no, no. It's where we are now. It's what we're supposed to be producing and becoming. Very little. What is to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. But I want us to see that this isn't biblically going to heaven, going to the New Jerusalem. Biblically is not a futuristic event. And here's what Hebrews says concerning this New Jerusalem thing. But you have come, not you will go one day, you'll go when you die, but you have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem. That's what we're talking about, right? The city of the living God. There it is. It's the city. It's the heavenly Jerusalem. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly to the church. Is that pretty clear? Is that clear enough, or do we need to? You come to the New Jerusalem. Let's go back. But you have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, the city of the living God. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all men, to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. How many of us have come to Jesus? Tell me. Okay. Well, then you've also then come to the New Jerusalem. Have you come to the blood? Come to the blood. Yeah. Then you've also come to the church, to the New Jerusalem. Is that pretty good? What was you asking? More than the blood of Abel. The blood of Abel cried out to God. Right. But it's a better blood, a better covenant. It started with Abel's blood, I guess. So do you see what John is now, what the New Testament thought of when they thought about the New Jerusalem and the heavenly Jerusalem? What they were talking about was not a place that you went when you died. It's what you had come into in the spirit dimension now. So that's what I really want us to see. So I need to ask you a question. I'm going to have to hit it some more on. But I need to ask you a question now. Is the New Jerusalem that we're going to be talking about now in this chapter, and this is basically what this chapter is about, is the New Jerusalem, is this New Jerusalem that we're going to be talking about with the gates of pearls and jasper walls and gold streets, and there's no mansions there, by the way, but is if we're going to be talking about that, is this a place that we are now, or is this a place that we will go once we die? Stop breathing. Well, we are. Aren't you a pearl? Peter says you are. We're going to talk about that. Peter says you're precious stones. You make us look good, Peter says. And we are, aren't we? Aren't the foundation stones adorned with all these precious stones? Yeah, they are. And you find a pearl of great price, right? When you find it, you can enter. Because the pearls are gates. So, okay, here we go. All right? So once you kick into this thing and this mentality, all of a sudden it begins to help us and help clarify what the book of Revelation and this revelation is about. So let's turn to page 258. I want to read 21:5, left column. And he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. Let me read that one more time. Behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. And I got to ask you, does God make all things new or make all new things? What's the difference? He takes what he has and he makes it new. And this is how God works. He's not going to create this planet after he's destroyed this one. He's not going to make a new planet, right? Am I reading right now? Right. Well, even then that wasn't the case. You know, even in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. But then when we started, it immediately skips into, and the earth was without form and void. So there's something that happened between in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void. Something took place there. And then what we're living in our time, we're living in something that He took and made new again. Right? He didn't create it new for us, did He? He just took it and made it new for us. Made it new again. Let's read the verse again. And He that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. He didn't say, I make all new things. Is that what He did in creation? Let's hang there just a second. Do we need to turn to Genesis and look at that? Remember what it said? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, right? And then the next verse. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. There's a gap thing there. Something took place. And then the sun and the moon were already up there. He just said, let there be light. And what happened? And there was light. And He took this, you know, the earth was without form and void. Water was on the face of the deep. Well, what did He say? He'd give you boundaries. You can go this far.
But something was already there.
But something was already there to create new again. Right, absolutely. because you know. I mean, okay. We got to get this thing covered. Man, this is something. Come down to the paragraph that starts with, this may best be seen. And then we're talking about all things being created. You know, He makes all things new. This may best be seen in personal redemption of a life. The person, though the same person, becomes a new creation or creature. King James Version. Old things are passed away. Behold what? All things are become new. Now, when you got born again and you became a new creature, did He recreate you? Or did He just make you new? He made you new. And this is what's happening here in this chapter. It's not new as in He made a new one. It's new in that He made it new again. He made it new in the sense that it's never been like this before. So in verse 1, the new heaven and the new earth never is something that had never before been experienced. Page 260. Now this is what I really want to get tonight, and so I can spend the rest of the time just getting through this. Verse 9, left column. And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. Okay, I've got several things I want to make sure I don't leave out of this. Let's just read the next paragraph. Verse 9 and 10 have the potential to forever change a person's theology. Traditional theology teaches that the following verses speak of heaven as in the place a person goes when they die or stop breathing. As will be seen, that is not the emphasis of this passage. The emphasis is to see the wife of the Lamb in all her glory. As we clearly know from the Scriptures, the wife of the Lamb is the church. And there's your Scripture references. Now, let's talk in just a second. It says that the angel came. One of the seven angels that had the seven last plagues came. Now, how many times have we talked about, as through this study, that the angel or an angel in the book of Revelation is more than a celestial being? We've basically established that, right? They're a messenger of God. And every angel, though, no matter if celestial or pastoral. Remember, who were the seven letters written to? To to the angels of the church at. Right, there you go. So whether our pastoral desires to show off and describe the Lamb's wife, the church. Let me say that again. Every angel, no matter if it's a celestial angel or if it's pastoral angel, no matter which they are, their desire is to show off the Lamb's wife, the church. That is me. I love to tell people about the church. I love church. I live for church. Church is what I am, and I love to tell people about the church of Jesus Christ. And what's amazing is that Jesus does too. It's his wife. He shows off his wife. You know, man, look at my wife. She is glorious. She is beautiful. Walls of jasper, gates of pearls. She is glorious. She is beautiful. See, I want people to love the church, and so I'm always talking about church. I try to make church fun. I try to show church off. I want people to love the church. And so the angel comes to take John and show him the Lamb's wife. Now, this is interesting. I look at verse 21, chapter 21, verse 10, right there. And he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me that great city. Now, what did he tell him in verse 9 that he was going to take him to see? The Lamb's wife. What did he take him and show him? Very good answer, pal. That's great answer. Great answer. That's exactly right. The Holy Jerusalem descending out of heaven from God. I just want to say this. You know, the purpose is not to go to heaven or stay in heaven. The purpose is to come out of heaven and win people. You know, and to minister to people. So it's extremely necessary here to see exactly what the angel took John to see. If we miss this, then we can't get the rest of the chapter. He takes him to see the bride. He says, "I'm going to show you the Lamb's wife," and then he takes him and he shows him the great city, the Holy Jerusalem. What do I want to do next? Okay. Let's read on the right column, come down under, let's see where it's, it's actually this is where the second paragraph begins. It begins with, "As previously discussed." As previously discussed, a mountain is, where did he take him? Took him to a mountain, right? As previously discussed, a mountain is a place of worship, such as Sinai, Moriah, Ephraim, Gerizim, Ebal, Bethel, Zion, you know, and we could keep on going there. So where John went wasn't to a literal mountain. Where John went was to a place of worship. And as John began to worship, John began to see the church. Now, I know I've got it in here, but I just want to make sure before we get too far away from it that he says, "I was in the Spirit." Look at 21:10 one more time. "And he carried me away in the Spirit." This "in the Spirit" thing always sets off the next great revelation of Jesus Christ. Remember, okay, and who remembers the all four of them? Does anybody remember all four of the four great revelations? I just want to. We'll talk about it more in a minute. I hope. I think. Right. And I think that we've got that point, and I'm sure I've got those in my notes, but I just wanted to make sure that I didn't leave that out. Look at verse 11 with me. All right, the New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven, descending out of heaven, having the glory of God, and her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Now that's confusing. Let's read. John relates the appearance of the Lamb's wife to the appearance of the throne room described in 4:3 and 6. Let's read that. "And he that sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone. And verse 6 says, and before the throne there was a sea of glass like unto crystal. Could it be that John is describing the church, the Lamb's wife, as the location of the throne room? This is exactly what John is describing. It becomes crystal clear in verses 22, 23, and chapter 22, 1 and 3. Now let me show you show you a few things here. Number 3. Okay. Missed something, I think. Yeah. Got the end of spirit thing. Okay, got all that.
All right.
Okay. Revelation 22:3 says, and there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it. Now, what John's talking about here in 21 all the way through like verse 12 of chapter 22 is this holy city, the New Jerusalem. So what he's describing here as he comes to chapter 22, verse 3, is still talking about the holy city, the New Jerusalem. And here's what we find in it. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. So what I'm wanting us to see here is the throne of God is in the holy city, the New Jerusalem. Is that correct? Am I correct? Make sure we get that. And what is the New Jerusalem, the holy city? Okay. The church. The Lamb's wife. What does that mean? What God's going to do in the earth, he's going to do to the church. Now, and I don't mean Life Gate, okay? And I don't mean a traditional church. I mean his glorious church, the church universal. What's going to happen is God rules and reigns. He's going to move through his church, out of his church. His throne is in his church. Jesus says, I will build my church. Right? And the gates of hell shall not prevail. I'm going to take care of hell through my church. Right? And so the throne of God isn't up there. Are you hearing me? Oh, God is really in each of us, corporately. Because what God's really going to do in the earth, he's going to do through us, right? So the throne of God is what I really want us to see is that it's not something far-fetched. The throne of God is really in us. So that's where I want us to see the throne is. In fact, you have been made kings and priests. And where you're going to rule is where? You're going to rule up there? What does the Bible say? Revelation 5:10. And has made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign in heaven. I messed you up, didn't I, baby? Yeah. You shall reign on the earth, you see. And that's what he's going to do in this earth, he's going to do through his church. That's where his throne is. That's what God is doing. Okay, page 261. Left column. Down to verse 12. And had a wall great and high. Now he's still talking about this Jerusalem, this New Jerusalem, this city, the Lamb's wife. It had a wall great and high, and had 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and the names written thereon, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Now, you'll get there. These 12 angels here had the names written on them, or on the gates, rather, that were the 12 children of Israel. On the east, 3 gates, and on the north, 3 gates, on the south, 3 gates, and on the west, 3 gates. Let's keep reading. John gives a detailed description of the city, the Lamb's wife. This is not a description of heaven, the place where dead saints walk. Let me read that again. This is not a description of heaven, the place where dead saints walk. This is the church, mighty and glorious. This is the New Jerusalem. The intent of the description is to show that the old Jerusalem has been replaced. The old Jerusalem was the harlot wife, or the servant wife, Hagar. The church is the glorious wife. The influence of the wife and church of the Lamb is to influence all nations. There's 12 gates on four sides, and four speaks of the four corners of the earth, or the north, south, east, and west. And what the church is to do is reach the globe. The church is to replace the tabernacle and the temple of old. They only had one entrance. Remember, we looked at that. Remember the when we drew out the tabernacle and the temple as well? There was the outer court, and it had one entrance. Then you had the brazen altar, the laver bowl. And then in here you had the lampstand, altar of incense, shewbread table. And back here was the Ark of the Covenant. It had one entrance all the way through. And there wasn't even an entrance back here. This was the veil. How many entrances does this New Jerusalem have? 12. 12 entrances. Three on each side. Our goal is not for one nation. Our goal is for all nations. And we're going to move in, I'll say it later on again, but it's all colors. It's all people. It's all kind of jewels. And people are God's jewels. But this is what we're here to do. The gates where 12 angels are stationed, are they there in the New Jerusalem that we're talking about here? Is not rectangular. It is what, four square, right? All sides the same. And three gates on each side, and angels stationed at every gate, right? Is that what we just, that's what we read, right? So what the angels are stationed there to do are to be the prophetic messengers. Are they stationed there to guard, to keep people out? Are they stationed there to guard, to invite people in? What would you think? In the Garden of Eden, the angel was stationed to keep people out, right? But in the church, go into the highways and the byways and compel them, come into my house. I want my house filled. You know? So the angels, the messengers of God, are to be in there to welcome people in, not to keep people out. Got all this stuff for you here, and I surely can't cover it all, but the gates also have written upon them the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. I'm at the very bottom. I'm about to turn the page. And the reason what we got to realize here is that the gospel was first preached to who? Jew or Gentile? Jew. And so it's preached first to the Jew, but it's not limited to the Jew. So the 12 tribes are here, and of course the good news came through the Jews. What were the twelve apostles? Were they Gentiles or Jews? No. All Jews. Apostle Paul was a Jew. Don't find a Gentile apostle until later on, and the word is not translated apostle. It's translated a servant or something like that. But my point is that. That's not strange to me. I mean, their names should be, you know, as places to welcome people. It should be that way. read Revelation 21:14 with me on page 262. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Okay. Now, the way that the traditional thinking here goes is you've got 12 foundations stacked on top of each other, like this. Is that how you kind of been? And you got Peter and James and John. Okay, and then you go, you know, that's the traditional way that we've been taught it or whatever. That's not how it was at all. Actually, if you can imagine this instead of looking down upon it, which I've got it drawn here, but if you can see what I'm trying to do here, what happened in the temple, and this is what John's relating to so that everybody will understand, is that the foundation stones were actually laid on top of the ground. The ground was leveled. And then these huge stones were brought in and laid under there. And so I would have 12 here if I did this correctly. So I'm way too small, aren't I? Anyway, let's do it. Start over. Okay. Right. Okay, that's good. The temple was leveled, and then there was first the cornerstone was put down. And then the next stone was lined up with the cornerstone, and this lined up with the cornerstone. And then you ended up with all these, two, three. All these are square, of course. Has to be 12, right? Yeah. All right. In other words, that's how. And then the temple was constructed on top of this. Okay? Now, this is what John's talking to us about. Instead of them being stacked on top of each other, they're all laid out like this, and then what's built is built on top of them. This is kind of important to understand, because if you do the stacked on top of one another idea, then one apostle is better than the other, or you got layers or something. But like this, it's all level. But who is the cornerstone? Jesus, there you are. So all of us, we line up with Jesus. I don't care who you are, apostle or prophet or evangelist, pastor, teacher, whatever your giftings are, you always line up with him, and then from there. But also you square up with others. Everything was squared up there together. So that's how it was really structured in the temple. And I've got you some information here about this, but the temple was made with these huge stones. Look at 1 Kings 5:17 there on the left page there, and you can read what I've got here for you on that. It says that the king commanded, and they brought great stones, costly stones, and huge stones to lay the foundation of the house. And Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders did hew them, and the stone squarers. So they prepared timber and stones to build the house. So these huge stones, and actually when they built the temple, they couldn't hear the sound. They would not hear the sound of a hammer. So what they did is they constructed these stones, rolled them in there somehow. And when, of course, Jerusalem was destroyed, these stones were moved and used somewhere. I mean, they were so fantastic. These huge 15-cubit stones, they're 10 cubits. Anyway, 15 feet by 15 feet square stones. And that's what the temple really sat on. Well, that's what John is trying to tell us here. Here we've got 12 foundation stones, and the apostles' names are on these stones, huge stones. Look on 262, right column, very top. Ephesians 2:19. Now, therefore, ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, and are built upon what? Foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being what? Chief cornerstone. In whom all the building fitly framed together groweth up into a holy temple in the Lord. To whom ye also are builded together as a habitation of God through the Spirit. Now as we study this chapter next week especially, next time especially, that in the New Jerusalem is God and the Son. Father and the Son are there. And they're living inside of the New Jerusalem. Or inside, as we're seeing, the church. The throne is there. The light is there. The church is eventually, whether we want to participate in it or not, but eventually the church is going to have all the answers. It's going to have all the light. I think we got a lot now. We just don't use it, But anyway, the light is understanding, of course. But anyway, that's what I want us to see. We're not talking here about a literal building. We're not talking about a God creating this planet that's going to come down out of heaven and it's going to look like a big city and it's going to do all this stuff. What we're talking about is the church, the glorious bride, the wife of the Lamb. We line up with the apostles' doctrine. Okay, Revelation 21:15. And he that talked with me had a golden reed to measure the city, and the gates thereof, and the wall thereof. And the city lieth foursquare, and the length is as large as the breadth. And he measured the city, and the reed 12,000 furlongs, the length and the breadth and the height are equal. Now, what does that sound like to you? Sound like a cube? Yeah, you are. And verse 17, and he measured the wall thereof 144 cubits. Now, there's a tremendous difference in the measurements here. The city is like 1,500 feet high. Or is it miles? And the wall is only 280-something feet. I figured this out. It's in your writing somewhere in here. It's strange. You've got this huge city, but this little short wall. And he measured the wall thereof in 100 feet. So turn the pages with me to 263. Now, in fact, you can just go ahead over to 264. But I'm going to read from 263, the last paragraph, before we get into that little map. And I don't know why it skipped all that to print. But at any rate, if you drew this thing out, now if you look to the left of your map, what you got there is the Mediterranean Sea. You see Israel, Jordan, the Red Sea, and all that right in there. You see that's what you got here. So if you begin the center of that side at Israel, right there, and then go the measurements that were given here, you see that if you cube it, then what you come out, you come way over there, you pass Kuwait, over there into Asia, if you go east. If you go to the north, you would go way up above Turkey, Georgia, and into Asia. If you go south, you go all the way down into Africa and into the Arabian Sea. Now, I drew this just because this is kind of what the black square is what the city would be. Because this is what the dispensationalists want us to think, that there's going to be this place that's going to come down and sit right there. And God's going to rule from there, you know. And that's not what John's trying to project at all. I mean, that would be kind of the size of the thing. You know, as huge as that is, could you get everyone in it? Good point. I guess that's where they put them. I guess that's why all those guys can't go to heaven, because there's not enough room for them. Okay. And then on the right over there, I've got one more thought that I wanted to project about the walls. If the walls are 1,500 miles high, why would the city need walls? Period. I mean, if it was a literal city, why would you put walls if death and hell and the serpent and all had been cast away? And the reason that they come up with this stuff is to keep their doctrine working, you know. So what they do then is, instead of making it a cube, they make it a pyramid. But I read a cube, don't you? Go ahead. Sure, that's what it means. Absolutely. Oh, we will. We are going that high. But I'm saying, but what they're saying in a literal sense is that it's going to be a real physical structure. They're not talking, taking it literally the way they want us to see it. It's God's going to create this big city, and it's going to come floating down out of heaven. It's going to sit down right here. And it's from there that the Lamb and the Father will rule and reign. Anyways, it's real strange to me. And I want to read you a quote here from Wycliffe about this pyramid thing. It's right to the right of the map, at the very bottom, where I begin the quote. The length, breadth, and height of the city is 12,000 furlongs, or about 1,500 miles. This would seem, upon first reading, to be in the shape of a cube, but I certainly would follow Simcox and many others in believing that this is a pyramidal structure. Is that even a word? That's what he says. You know, I don't read pyramid in there. I read cube, and it's four square. It's perfect on all sides, and that's the church. I don't know. Because they have to make it work. There's no way you could build a 1,500, huh?
But Jesus is the
cornerstone. He's at the bottom. Yeah. Oh, sure. But they don't go that way. They do literal foundations. These are big, huge stones. I remember not too long ago, I was watching one of the religious broadcasting stations, and they were talking about that they had already cut the stones for the new temple that was going to be built, and they were on their way. They were on the ship being transported across the Well, where are they going to put them when they get them there? I mean, the whole thing. But anyway, the whole thing, Pam, is what I'm trying to say. The whole thing, they do this stuff just to keep their doctrine floating. And it is a sinking ship. And when people, you know, start hearing it and start putting light on this stuff and really start understanding what we're really here to do, not fly away. We're here to conquer. We're here to bring the glory of God here rather than taking it somewhere else. Then all of a sudden things are going to start changing. Anyway, let's read 21:17. There you go. Go ahead, girl. Here you go. 21:17. And he measured the wall. He measured the wall thereof 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of the angel. Now, somebody read that to me and make it make sense. And he measured the wall thereof 144 cubits. And this is the part, according to the measure of a man, that is, of the angel. Is John speaking about the measure of a man, or is he talking about the measure of an angel? Somebody say yes. Yes. 21:17, right under the corner of the picture. Of your picture right there.
Okay.
Well, What John, I think, is wanting to tell us is that the angels are men. You know, that the messengers, you know, we've already discussed it earlier, that the angel came to John and gave him this information, and how we've looked at all the times of the angelic beings being throughout the whole Revelation. The letters were written to the seven angels of the church at. And what I see here is it's clearer than ever, you know, that the angels are not angelic and celestial, but the angels are really the messengers of God. In other words, how do I measure up? Well, it's going if I'm an angel or not. What kind of job do I do? How do I do as I guard the gate, or as I not guard the gate, but stand at the gate and welcome people into the kingdom? How do I do with the message God's given me? You know? You're angels. You're messengers. How do you measure up? See, John's simply letting us know that he really isn't talking about a celestial being. He's really talking about us. We're really what measures what gets accomplished. How high is your New Jerusalem? How high do you make it for people? How big, how large? Page 265. Right column, got to read some. Ooh, me. It's going to be another long one. That's what I lack. Right column, come down to the paragraph that begins with the measuring rod. The measuring rod used to measure the New Jerusalem was provided by the messenger of the Lord. Angel messengers of the Lord give all the Johns of the kingdom the ability to calibrate the things of the church, the New Jerusalem. I give people measuring rods every week. They should be able to take what I give them and measure their lives, doctrine, church, could go on, families, finances. How do we measure up? This, of course, is not to do away with angelic beings, but neither should we not see the angelic aspects of God's ministries and messengers as they are depicted in the Revelation as angels. Verse 18. And the building of the wall of it was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, like unto clear glass. Okay. The building of the wall of it was jasper. No, it really wasn't. It was pure gold. No, it really wasn't. It was clear glass. if you had to draw this thing, if you took this this all this imagery that John's given here, and you try to literally draw it. Could you do it? It's impossible to draw it because he's always changing it, like a jasper stone that's clear as crystal. A jasper is a gem, and its colors are red, yellow, or brown. Yet John says in the very same verse that it's clear as crystal. That the city is clear as crystal. He says it's gold, and there's going to be a street of gold, but then he's going to say, well, it's really not gold color. It's really like clear glass. So is John confused? And what's going on? You got it. He's not describing a literal city. What John's really describing is not even heaven. What John's describing is our concept of heaven. What John's describing is the Lamb's wife. She's like precious stones. She's a precious gem. But she's really not a gem at all, you know? And she's gold, but she's really not gold. You can't draw this city. You know why? Because you can't draw the church. Or you can draw this building. But can you draw the church? The church that Jesus builds, we know about it. We have a concept of it, but draw it. Wow. Revelation 21:19. And the foundations of the wall of the city were garnished with all manner of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third, how do you say that, Shirley? The fourth, an emerald. There you are. The fifth, sardonyx. The sixth, sardis. The seventh, the eighth, beryl. The ninth, topaz. The tenth, and the 11th, jacinth. And the 12th, amethyst. That one we know. I can't say it, but we know it. So now what this is, let me show you now. These stones, these foundation stones, these squared stones. Let's see. How you do this? I'm trying to make a cube. There you go. All right. Now, what we're saying here is that the stones here, that verse says, is all decked out with all of these rubies and stones and jacinths and all that stuff. That's what it's saying. Covered with all of these stones. Every one of these 12 are colored with all of these different stones, all of these things in there. And that's what that verse is trying to say to us. Now, but what are the stones? You know, if we're doing what we think is accurate and it's flowed so far this way, what are they? See, these apostles are decorated with these stones. Look down at 1 Peter 2:4 here. To whom coming as unto a living stone, disallowed indeed of men, but chosen of God and precious, talking there about Jesus, ye also are lively stones, are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. What that verse is saying is that we are the precious stones that make the apostles beautiful. They went out into all the globe, into all the earth, and they began to bring people in. They began to invite people into the kingdom, standing at the gates, saying, come into the kingdom. Come into the church. You don't have to sneak in. And you come in any door you want, you know? Just come in. And they went out, and what happened is they became decorated by all the jewels they had won. And their lives were covered. And you really couldn't see them. You could just see the people that they had brought in. All the colors of people. Black ones and yellow ones and white ones and red ones. You know, all colors. of people came into the kingdom because of the apostles. We came into the kingdom. On the right column on 266, come down under Exodus 28:21 there, that paragraph that I wrote starts with, in this society. In this society, all are priests unto our God. As the apostles went into all the earth, the precious lively stones of God attached to them, forming the foundation of the new and heavenly Jerusalem, which in fact replaced the old Jerusalem. Revelation 21:21. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Were they gates or were they pearls? Were they gates decorated with pearls? Or were they pearls? You know, this is what, I mean, I think this is, John did this on purpose. Every several gates was of one pearl. No, man, see what I'm saying? And the street, how many, is it plural or singular? Street of the city was pure gold, as it were transparent glass. And those gates, you know, are they pearls or are they gates? Each gate was a pearl. John does not say that the gates were like a pearl. You know, he says they were a pearl. And how would you shut them? If it was a gate like we're thinking about, you know, how would you shut a pearl gate? How do you shut up a pearl? How do you open a pearl? Because what I'm wanting us to see is John's not talking about a city, a literal city. He's talking about the bride, the Lamb's wife. and I could talk about here. I could talk about, you know, once you found that pearl, you know, the pearl of great price. Jesus tell the parable. Once you found it, you'll sell everything to get it. Once you find this thing, I mean, it becomes that important to you. Okay. I'm on page 267. I want to read left paragraph, the paragraph that begins with John tells us. John tells us that the street, singular, one street of the city was pure gold, as it were transparent glass. It would be foolish to have a city of this size reaching from Asia to Africa and from the Mediterranean nearly to India to have only one street. Do you agree with that? Some theologians who work diligently at convincing people that this really is a natural city argue here that it is not a street. They say this is a plaza. Here's what Wycliffe says. The word translated street, there it is, P-L-A-T-E-I-A, means literally a broad place. From this word derives our word plaza. That's what he says. And the street's mentioned again in chapter 22, verse 2. And for a better understanding of the verses, you know, it's even transparent. You know, I mean, it's just not a street. It's a way of life. It's the way we live. So John just really can't describe this walk, this way of life. You know, so he says it's gold, but it's transparent. It's a transparent life. It's a life that's not hiding stuff. There's one way, right? One way. Yep. That makes sense to me. And that's kind of biblical. Right? That's good, pal. That's very good. Revelation 21:22. And I saw no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. Now, I'm going to do this really fast. The word here is naos. It's translated temple 43 times in the New Testament. And what it means is the inner place. I'll go back over into my tabernacle drawing. Okay. This would be the naos right back here. And it's, by the way, a cube. A square. 10 cubits by 10 cubits by 10 cubits by 10 cubits. Okay. This area out here is another Greek word called hieron, H-E-I-R-O-N, I think is how it's spelled. But this is the temple also, but it's the outer court. It's the outer place. What John says that this temple is the naos. It's the innermost court. That's what he says. Look at page 268. And at the top there, here's what Paul says about the naos, or what the New Testament tells us, the apostles tell us. And there's several verses here for you. I'm just going to read the first one. 1 Corinthians 3:16. Know ye not that you are the naos of God? You're the innermost place. You're the Holy of Holies. You're the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you. If any man defile the temple of God, he shall God destroy. For the temple of God is holy. Which temple, naos, you are? See, what I want us to say is this is not a city. This is the temple. This is the bride. This is the place of worship. This is the Lamb's wife. Where in this area, of course, is where the Ark of the Covenant was, presence of God dwelt. And this is where we are in His presence. Temple, naos. Okay, 21:23. And the city had no need of the sun. Does it say it didn't have a sun, or it had no need of the sun? You see where I'm at? Had no need of the sun, neither of the moon. It wasn't that it didn't have a moon, it just didn't need one to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. The tabernacle, again, in this area out here, of the Hieron area of the temple, and outside was lit. How would it be lit? What light would it have? Natural light, sunlight. Okay, good. So that would be the natural light. All right. Then when you come into here, and you went behind the first veil, what light did you have? Lampstand, which is oil light, right? Good. When you go back here, what light do you have? Very good. Look at you. I am proud. I am proud of you. That's good. In the natural, it would be pitch dark, you know? But in the spiritual, there's the Shekinah, there's the presence of God. Remember the cloud, the glory cloud? It's set right there, right on the ark. And so the light wasn't natural light, it was spiritual light, but it wasn't oil light, but it was Shekinah glory light. And what he's saying here is that the church, us, should be the light of the world. Does that ring a bell to anybody? Has he ever heard that before? Who said that? No, it's Jesus. Man, you get the Shekinah. And okay, it probably is. It probably is in John. That's good. That's good. Very good. Okay, look on up to 268, right column. Come down to Matthew 5:14. And of course, I got you all kinds of stuff in here about this, but I'm getting the point across to you. You are the light, and you're the church. You are the bride of Christ. You know, we all play a part. We're all lively stones. We make it beautiful. Matthew 5:14, Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle." Now, I'm going to tell you a joke. It's not a real joke, but it was funny. A lady used to go to church here. Her name is LaRue or Molly Nobles. And she was married, and she'd gotten up one night, and it was dark, and her husband said, "Turn the light on." And she says, "I am a light." And he says, "Well, open your mouth so I can see." But we are the light. Out of our mouth should come light. I mean, there's, I know in the natural, you know, but then when you look at that, out of our mouths should come understanding and light for lives. How to do it right. How to live it. And that's what this is. This is what I'm trying to say. This is what the church is. This is what the bride is. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Revelation 21:24. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it, and the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honor into it. Now notice the nations are coming. And another thing, we're going to get this next time, but there is a tree of life. And the nations feed on it for healing. In the middle of this city, there's the tree of life. And we minister to the nations, and this is what this is about. And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there. And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. Let's read. The absolute goal of the wife and the bride of the Lamb is to bring the nations to them which are saved into the light. Finally, let's come on down to underneath Isaiah 60:5, and let's read. The goal of the church is not to go to heaven, but to become heaven. Is that good? Let me read that one more time. The goal of the church is not to go to heaven, but to become heaven. The goal of the church is not to go live with God, but that God inhabit the church. The goal of the church is not to go live in a mansion, but rather dwell in the throne of God with the Lamb. The gates, precious pearls, are not to be shut at all. All nations are to come and find the pearl of great price. Is this only futuristic? Of course not. The wife is the building fitly framed together, which now groweth unto a holy temple in the Lord. She should today be the light shining into every nation, giving light to save and to walk. She is bringing the glory and honor of the nations into it, because she is the glory. The Bible says that a woman's hair is her glory, right? Isn't that what it says? But what is a man's glory? What is the man's glory? The woman. The church is supposed to be the glory of God. We are His woman. Let's pray. And together we can change.